This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Writer Stanley Elkin died Wednesday at the age of 65 of heart failure. In an obituary in today's New York Times, William Grimes wrote, quote, "Elkin was often described as a clear-eyed realist, even though his work veered toward parody and black humor. His deliberately preposterous fictional situations led him to explore the pain at the heart of the human condition. His long struggle with multiple sclerosis only deepened his preoccupation with suffering and mortality," unquote. Elkin had MS since 1972 and needed a wheelchair to get around. His best-known novels include The Dick Gibson Show, about a radio talk show host, and The Franchiser, the story of a businessman with a chain of ice cream stores who develops MS. Elkin's other books include The MacGuffin, George Mills, and Pieces of Soap. I spoke with Elkin in 1993, after the publication of Van Gogh's Room at Arles, three novellas. The first novella was about a professor of political geography who has multiple sclerosis. Just as he's preparing for a party he's throwing for his graduate students, his wife walks out on him. I asked Elkin if this was him imagining the worst.
It's partially me imagining the worst, and it's actually something that really happened to me. My wife did not leave, but I was teaching at Boston University in the fall of 1976, and my MS was just beginning to kick in rather severely. And there was a snowstorm. I had been invited out to some student's house for dinner, and they were troubled by the snowfall, and so they asked if they could come and bring the dinner to my place. Now, this was somewhat awkward for me because I made it a habit never to keep anything in my refrigerator. I ate every meal out at this Greeky Spoon on Kenmore Square, and they insisted on coming, and I told them, but you must be very, very careful to clean up everything, because I never touched the house. I mean, I lived in one room, essentially, and wouldn't have recognized the kitchen if I had been pushed into it. At any rate, they did come, and they were, you know, seven sheets to the wind when they arrived, and 114 to the wind when they left. I mean, and it just became a disaster. And I did command them to stay and do as they promised, to clean up everything, and of course they didn't, and it was just totally out of control. My wife and family were not with me at that time. They were back in St. Louis, living the life. And when I wrote this novella, some many years later, I called on those circumstances.
I'm interested in how you think your writing has been changed, if at all, by the MS. Do you think it's changed stylistically at all?
No, I don't think it's changed stylistically. I think I'm able to concentrate more because the only thing I can do is sit in a chair.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I open the store in the morning, the bubble machine, the word processor, and sit down, and before I know it, day is done, playing taps. So in the days when I could, you know, smoke and walk around and hop and skip and play ping pong, that was always a lot more fun than writing, and so I did it. Today, you know, I do my work.
I interviewed Andre Debuse not too long ago, and he is paralyzed from the waist down.
I know that.
Yeah, because of a car accident that he was in. And he was telling me that he was having such a hard time writing, and he was trying to write about, you know, able-bodied people, and he was spending all this time.
That's because I know why that is. It's because his thing came on so abruptly.
Right. Well, what he told me was that he didn't want to write about somebody. He didn't want to write fiction about somebody who was in a wheelchair because he felt that until he could write about somebody who could get up and walk around, and that he wasn't really writing yet. Did you ever go through a crisis like that?
No, not really. I mean, when the MS was diagnosed in England in 1972, I went into a kind of clinical depression almost, but bed and read the drapes. And finally Joan said, let's go to the movies. We went to the movies, and that was the end of it.
How long did the depression last?
Maybe 2 weeks.
How was it diagnosed?
I began with a kind of numbness in my fingers, which I thought at the time, you know, was just from bad posture or something. Then they sent me to a gym, and the numbness in my right finger spread to a general numbness in my left hand. And then they put me in the hospital and gave me this spinal tap and said, it's MS, kiddo. And I didn't know what MS was, and it scared the hell out of me. And I thought, you know, I would be falling downstairs. But that didn't happen. And that's what I mean by what happened to Andre Dubuis. I mean, his came on, you know, so suddenly. Mine, you know, you can get accustomed to anything.
Uh-huh.
And so from 72 to 75, I had this tingling. I didn't start using a cane until 76, and then you know, it's only been a few years since I've been in a wheelchair, and, you know, I can hardly remember the good old days.
We're featuring a 1993 interview with writer Stanley Elkin, who died Wednesday. More of our interview after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with our 1993 interview with Stanley Elkin.
I want to ask you a little bit about growing up. Your father was a salesman for, I believe, costume jewelry?
Right, a firm called Coro.
So did he have to travel around and sell it? Was he a traveling salesman?
He was a traveling salesman, and he was away for perhaps 2 and 3 weeks at a time.
Uh-huh.
I guess then he would come home on weekends, and I saw him, you know, half my life.
And the other half he was gone?
Right.
Was he a good salesman?
He was a wonderful salesman.
Did he have a good rap?
Well, I mean, he didn't have a rap, because a rap is something you memorize. And my father was a very spontaneous man, and I never heard him repeat a story.
Did that
influence me?
Well, I was wondering if it helped inspire your interest in language.
It helped inspire my interest in story.
Uh-huh.
Because he always came back with wonderful tales of odd things that had happened to him on the road. And, I mean, he was an incredibly vivid man.
Did you read and write a lot when you were young?
I did more writing than reading. I mean, I never read a book until I was in high school. No, that's not true. I read See Here, Private Hargrove when I was 12 years old. And I read A Tree Grows in Brooklyn when I was, I think, 14. But that's it.
That's very unusual, isn't it, for someone to write a lot yet not read a lot?
Yes. I have no memory of being in high school, even. I mean, I remember nothing ever happened to me in terms of the intellectual until I went to college. And then suddenly the world lit up for me.
What changed?
They gave you assignments. That's what changed. Now, they gave you assignments in high school and in grammar school, too, I suppose. But one didn't really do them. One was out in the schoolyard.
So what were you writing about during those earlier years?
Oh, they were such dopey things. I remember that I wrote a story. I was perhaps 12 or 13 years old, and it was about some guy. I remember he was reading addresses, 7243, 7246, 7247, and finally he comes to the address that he's going, and he goes in and he kills somebody. I mean, it was just a dopey story.
Why did you want to write?
The answer is going to be so mysterious, and I mean, I've never been to a psychiatrist in my life, but my father had, we've already mentioned that he worked for Coro, And he had all of this stationery with the Coral Pegasus, which was the logo for the firm. And I enjoyed just writing on that letterhead with the Pegasus. And it seemed to me that I was making a kind of book. I mean, it's just, who knows? I can't explain that.
So there's almost something physical that you liked about writing?
It was something
visual.
It was a kind of production, just to see. I mean, if it had been on, I wouldn't have done it on plain paper.
Uh-huh. So you used to write all your stories on your father's stationery?
That's right. And then until I became ill, I used to write all my novels in university blue books, exam booklets.
And when you became ill, you started using a computer.
Right.
So, okay, you got to college, you started reading more. What did reading do for you? What did you find in books?
Style. Language. The sense that, you know, one could say things that were, you know, just... If you've made a metaphor in a kind of way, you've found a thing. You've put something in the world that was never there before. It's as though you discovered grapes.
So when you started reading, did you find ideas that you thought but never expressed before, or people like you, or something that you deeply identified with?
No.
It was just about style.
Right. And in a kind of way, that's unfortunate, because to a certain extent, the rap on me is that, I'm all style and not a whole hell of a lot of plot. I don't think that's true as much as it used to be. I think that I discovered the idea of plot in combination with style with a novel I wrote, and it was published in 1982, called George Mills. And I think I've been able to do it ever since.
Some of my favorite writing of yours is essays in which you write about yourself and what you're thinking or what you're feeling. You had a recent essay about a period of temporary madness that you went through that was actually drug induced by a drug that you were taking for the MS. Did you know when?
Well, I named the drug. It was prednisone.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very dangerous thing.
Did you know when you were going through this period of temporary madness that there was something wrong, or did you accept that reality as being reality?
Absolutely not. I thought, you know, I didn't know I was nuts until I was sitting in the shower and didn't know what I was supposed to be doing there. I had forgotten how to use soap. I had forgotten what water was for. And my wife Joan had to, put me through the paces of my shower. And I asked, how long has this been going on? She said, it's been going on for 2 or 3 weeks. And it was astonishing to me, because I thought that for 2 or 3 weeks, I'd been doing what I always did. I was working. And she said that, no, I hadn't been working. I'd been sitting on the side of the bed, watching television, not even watching television, but just using the remote control and snapping from one station to the next. And this was directly attributable to the fact that I was ODing on prednisone.
You were prescribed too large an amount?
I was prescribed the right amount, but you're supposed to taper off when you're taking prednisone, and the physical benefits of the drug are so astonishingly successful that I would not taper off, and I just kept feeding this stuff to myself.
Can you just describe a little bit what it was like, if you remember, to not know what water was for, to not know what soap was for?
It was, in a way, the most interesting. I mean, when I learned that I was nuts, It was the most, I obsessed on it. It was the most interesting thing that had ever happened to me. I mean, I can't even say that I was depressed. I was depressed when I was told that I had multiple sclerosis. I was not depressed when I was told that I was that I had to be hospitalized. And this only lasted, you know, for, well, I was in the hospital for 5 days, but the whole period of my madness was perhaps 2 months.
So what was fascinating about being that disoriented and not recognizing anything?
Well, I'm a person who, you know, concentrates on the world. And here I was concentrating on something that, you know, had nothing at all to do with the world. I mean, I was having hallucinations, and it was just, it was very strange, very strange.
Stanley Elkin recorded in 1993. He died Wednesday at the age of 65. Elkin recently completed a novel called Mrs. Ted Bliss, which is scheduled to be published by Hyperion in September. This is Fresh Air.